A warm welcome to all you guys out there. I hope the times are treating you well. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren and I am the webmaster and editor of redicecreations.com. Thank you for tuning in. We are going to do a bit of a different thing here today. Instead of our monthly regular guest, Christopher Morse, we are going to rebroadcast a subscriber interview that we did with Jim Morse back in early November of last year, called The Secret Society Agenda, Alien or Human. And you guys curious to know what you're missing out on in this subscriber section can have a bit of a taste on it. By the way, Jim is going to be back with us on Sunday the 22nd this month, so heads up on that. Also, next Sunday we have an upcoming interview with Ralph Ellis. Do join us then. Until then, take good care, enjoy the program, and we will talk more soon. Welcome, subscribers. We have Jim Morse with us, and we just concluded an interview on his latest book, The Terror Conspiracy, and a lot of things about 9/11 and so forth on the regular Red Ice Radio show. And now we're going to pass over the threshold, so to speak, and dive a bit deeper into the rabbit hole. And I want to talk a little bit about secret societies, like, you know, the Freemasons, the Illuminati, the Rosicrucians, and the OTO, and things like that, and about the stuff that might connect the thing that Jim writes about in Rule by Secrecy with his book Alien Agenda. And Jim, to get things going, first off, I mean, do you yourself consider that there is a connection between these two kind of currents of information, so to speak?
Yes, there is. And I detail that in my book, Rule by Secrecy, which is available, by the way, in German and in Dutch, in Bulgarian. There's a Polish edition, and it's slowly but surely circulating around the world. And in there, my working hypothesis was, is the same thing you just asked, is there a connection between these secret societies with each other and with a long-standing plan to take control of the world? And amazingly enough, yes, there is. And it goes back for centuries, actually. What we see is it's based on secret technological knowledge that was available in the earliest of the world's history. Up until the 19th century, most everybody believed, and there are still people who believe, that the world's first great civilization was the Egyptian civilization. And yet we find out that the Egyptian civilization did not evolve upward, it devolved downward. The earliest dynasties were much more technically proficient than the later dynasties. And so what we find is that that was simply a continuation of an even older civilization, which was the Sumerian civilization, and the Sumerians apparently had built their civilization on the ruins of a even greater civilization, which, for want of a better term, we'll just call Atlantis. And this apparently was a, that's another thing, you know, there's been arguments for years over where this mythical continent of Atlantis might have been. Some people say it was centered on the island of Santorini in the Mediterranean. Others say it was Cyprus. Others say it was somewhere else. Some people say it was Antarctica before it got covered with ice. And some people, of course, say that it was a large continent in the Atlantic Ocean, which sank under the waves of the ocean. I think the truth, what I'm beginning to find out, is that all of those are all connected. This was a worldwide civilization back in our prehistory, and we are only just now having the knowledge and sophistication to understand that that's what was going on. So we have to go back to our earliest antecedents to try to learn where we truly came from so that we'll know where we're heading today.
Do you think that these guys, you know, were behind stuff like the pyramids in Egypt, and what about those in South America? I mean, do you think that's...
In fact, you find that there are pyramids all over the world. Just found a huge pyramid in Eastern Europe. There are pyramids in China.
China,
And again, these are evidences of this pre-diluvial giant great civilization.
Yeah, very interesting. And of course, there is so many directions here to go, basically.
Right.
But one thing that kind of popped up in my mind, as you said here, regarding Sumeria and stuff like that, because, of course, I know that you have mentioned stuff like the more kind of occult, I guess, reason why the U.S. went into Iraq and to hitch up, I guess, some, you know, old technology that have been down there in Babylon, correct?
Exactly. I have in my files news clippings from the Associated Press, from the European Press, that were showing in 1999, 2000, 2001, that French and German archaeological teams were making, quote, amazing new discoveries in Mesopotamia, which, of course, is today modern-day Iraq.
Mm.
And now, where would they be taking these artifacts and perhaps tablets and scrolls that would have some of this ancient knowledge on there? They would have taken it to the Iraqi National Museum in Baghdad.
Hmm.
And, of course, when the with the U.S. invasion of Iraq, we did not follow normal military strategy, which is to seize an objective, hold it, consolidate your winnings, and then move on to the next objective.
Hmm.
We instead made a beeline for Baghdad, which is one of the reasons that we're still having so much problem over there today, because we failed to pacify the countryside.
Hmm.
And what happened in Baghdad? The looting of the Iraqi National Museum. And there was a crowd of looters, probably hired as cover, but it's also obvious to me and many others that this was an organized looting. This was an organized operation. And they went in there, they had keys to some of the vaults. Some of the guards were suspiciously missing. They found a pair of glass cutters in there that are not commercially available in Iraq.
Mm.
And, of course, thousands and thousands of pieces were taken, many of which have now been found and returned. But the key to it is, in the words of Colonel Matthew Bagdanos, who investigated the Iraqi National Museum looting for General Tommy Franks, he said the inside job, and that's what he called it, was in the basement, okay, and that they took tens of thousands of items out of the basement, and only a few hundred have been recovered. And, of course, the basement is where they would have taken the new discoveries. So someone apparently knew or feared that they had gained some of this knowledge over this ancient technology, and they wanted it for themselves. And so we invaded this country, and we looted their museum to get hold of the artifacts and of the tablets and scrolls that might contain such knowledge.
Hmm. Yeah, because I'm thinking about, you know, stuff like ancient technology connecting with, I guess, what I would refer to more like, you know, the modern technology, such as, you know, quote, Stargate technology. I mean, there
right.
are a lot of things connecting with this, because I know that in, I think it is in 2007, they're going to start up a new particle collider. I think it's in around the CERN area in France, or if it's on the border
right.
to Switzerland. And I mean,
and these superconductors are the key. This technology that we're talking about is not necessarily mechanical technology.
Yeah.
It's manipulation of energy at the atomic and subatomic level, which is basically the keys to unlocking the secrets of the universe.
Hmm.
Because if you can manipulate energy, then it's been shown that, or certainly theorized, that you can negate gravity. Well, if you negate gravity, then you can also begin to negate time. You might recall in the UFO literature about when a UFO comes over, the car engines stop.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Well, if you look at that closely, though, when the UFO moves off, the engines start up again, but the starters don't come on. It's not like when you start your car and it goes, and boom, and it starts up. They just suddenly start working again, which means that when the UFO came over, it placed an energy field over that area, which apparently freezes time. And the pistons, the internal pistons of the of an engine just stop. Okay, and then when the field moves off, then they continue to go again. So, and once you understand that it's possible to manipulate gravity, then you can also manipulate time. Now you're talking about the possibility of time travel and perhaps even interdimensional travel. We all know, because it was reported in the mainstream media, that Saddam Hussein considered himself the reincarnation of King Nebuchadnezzar of ancient Babylon. Okay, so that would we need to go back to the Bible and look at the story of King Nebuchadnezzar, who built an edifice that has been translated as a fiery furnace, but apparently that's not a very good translation. But it was a structure made of gold, and somehow it created an energy field. Okay, and every time his people went in there to try to see if they could manipulate it, they died. So this prompted King Nebuchadnezzar to go to Palestine and get hold of the three Hebrew priests, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and brought them up and said, I want you to make this thing work, because apparently they had held some of this secrets of this ancient technology. But they said, hey, you're not our king, you don't believe in our God, we're not going to work for you. So he said, okay, well, I'm just going to throw you in there, and you're either going to make it work or you're going to die. But interestingly enough, it says right there in the Bible, they didn't just throw them into this structure. First, they donned their raiments and their hats, their protective clothing, if you will, and they put them in this energy field. And King Nebuchadnezzar, who didn't want to get anywhere close to it, said, well, are they in there? And his minions said, yes, O king, they're in there. In fact, we put three in there, and now there's four people in there. He said, well, who's the fourth person? And they said, well, O king, it's the Son of God. Well, wait a minute. Who was this fourth person? Where did he come from? And who was that? And what did they mean by the Son of God? Well, we don't know, because it never tells us anything past that. But apparently they were able to open some sort of a portal, a stargate, and obviously somebody came through there. So, you know, this has given us some tantalizing clues as to what this ancient technology might entail.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this, of course, I come to think of, you know, UFOs and stuff like this, because there might be then a current, you know, of this knowledge running through our history and kind of more like the backdrop or below the surface, so to speak.
That's correct. And also, Heinrich, have you considered this? Most of the reports of UFOs are actually pretty small craft. Okay?
Yeah.
There's no sign of any engines or jets or fuel or anything like that. And in fact, there's never been even any reports of them containing a bathroom. Okay? So it seems quite realistic to say that these craft are not intergalactic craft. They are not big enough, they're not well supplied enough to go for, you know, hundreds of years between galaxies. So it would seem that they are essentially shuttlecraft that are only made to travel short distances in brief time periods, and that would indicate that they were using something other than ramjet technology.
So, I mean, do you think that if we were to talk more about the UFO phenomena, I mean, obviously it's impossible to nail it down like that, because the phenomenon itself always seem to go in another direction when you think you got it nailed down. But
that's right. Then it'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
But see, this energy manipulation could explain so much of the phenomena that's in the literature, such as these people being able to pass through walls, missing time, again, the fact that electrical devices cease to function when this energy field is present, and they are manipulating energy is what they're doing. And this is what the people within our military-industrial complex and within the intelligence community, they desperately want to get their hands on this technology, and they don't want to give it to their perceived enemies, so they cannot make it public.
that's quite a dilemma there, because it could be used, I guess, in some sense, one would suggest that if such technology were available, that they would be using it in wars and so forth. But
absolutely.
But that might not then be the reason for why they are, you know, why they have developed the technology. Because if they're, as you say, if they're all the same guys at the top, the most important thing, I guess, is to have us, the rest of humanity, fighting amongst ourselves and having these wars with old technology, so to speak, and they can, you know, fly around in their UFOs doing their thing.
Right. And I'll tell you what I feel like is the reason for the secrecy about UFOs, and of course that's been led by the United States. The United States has applied pressure to many other countries not to talk about UFOs. They have not been entirely successful. Mexico has been at the forefront of being very open and public about the UFOs, and you know, their defense minister went on television a few years ago, showed camera film from some fighter interceptors and said they were chasing UFOs. The French, of course, came out with their Cometa report a few years ago, and although they were quick to say this was not an official government report, nevertheless, the people involved in that study were past and present members of the French government, and they said that the UFOs are real and that they represent devices coming from somewhere else and being guided by non-human intelligences. So other nations have been more forthcoming than the United States. And I think the reason for this secrecy is that we're back to these secret societies and to these wealthy elites that want to maintain their power and control over the rest of humanity. And they have this power and control thanks to their wealth, and their wealth is derived from their monopolies over energy, transportation, pharmaceuticals, etc. And so I don't think they really care if we know that there are, say, aliens out there. They don't care.
Yeah.
What they care about is if we know there are aliens out there, then we know for certain that there's alternative technologies out there which might then threaten their monopolies.
So, I mean, do you consider at all that there actually might be, you know, aliens in that sense behind the, let's say, the structure, or when you know, the first secret societies became, when they spread throughout the world, that right at the top, I guess, of the pyramid, that there might be an alien race or some, I mean, we could be talking still about a rogue network, but of non-humans.
Well, now, you're talking very closely now, sounding like David Icke.
Yeah.
You know, that these reptilians are trying to control us.
Yeah.
I'll say, you know, I have hard enough problem trying to convince people that 9/11 was an innocent job and that the war on terror is basically a sham.
Yeah.
And I have enough sense of public relations that I don't think I'm going to win friends and influence a lot of people by publicly calling the Queen Mother of England a 200-year-old reptilian cannibal.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
But in the same breath, I have to say that I cannot categorically deny all that, because when you track back the families and the bloodlines, you find that the people who are now trying to bring us into the New World Order belong to these secret societies such as the Council on Foreign Relations, Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Bilderbergers, which involve a lot of the nobility of Europe. And you find that these people all track to older secret societies, such as the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians, and all of that stemmed from the world's first great secret society, the Knights Templar.
Yeah, yeah.
Who has been well documented as having gained secret knowledge from their excavations under the old Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem during the First Crusade.
Yeah.
And all of that wealth, that treasure, which was not only gold and silver and precious stones, but also knowledge in the form of tablets and scrolls and ancient writings that predated Greece and Egypt and go back to the Sumerians and even back perhaps past that, then all of a sudden you can see that there is a linkage that brings from the ancient past right up to the very present.
Exactly. And so do you think that the I mean, well, if you want to speculate, what kind of knowledge do you think that they were able to extract from under the Temple Mount?
Well, for example, what we are now learning is the secrets of the monatomic elements. Mm. Okay, these are single atom elements that are found in all heavy metals, including gold, silver, the platinum metals, and they have found that through a heating process, these can be reduced to a fine white powder.
Mm.
And this white powder, when it's placed on a weighing pan, a scale, the pan actually weighs less than it did before you put the powder in it, which means it has anti-gravity properties that can be transmitted outside of itself.
Hmm.
So all of a sudden we begin to realize maybe that, for example, maybe that's how they were able to move those huge multi-ton stones that make up the pyramid, that make up the big, huge edifice at Baalbek.
Yeah, yeah.
So we find that I think, is getting to some of the secrets of this ancient technology.
Yeah, so the prize here again could be to utilize this kind of technology or develop it and then bring it into play again and build this, you know, kind of this global, I guess, empire with you know, that might more closely resemble the idea, at least, of what the collective humanity has regarding, you know, a more ancient civilizations, like, for example, Atlantis that you mentioned earlier.
Right, exactly. And but like I said, see, if this energy manipulation, and if this comes down to what is now being studied scientifically here in the United States, which they call zero-point energy.
Yeah.
In other words, drawing energy from even the vacuum of outer space.
Yeah.
Again, at the atomic and subatomic level, if they could make that practical, then you're talking about limitless free energy.
Yeah.
All right. Now, whoa, with the people who are control us through their monopoly of gas and oil and petroleum products, do they want us having free and limitless energy?
Nope.
I think not.
Unfortunately, not. No. So I mean, what does it take to end this? I mean, this era that we are basically in at the moment, because it seems to, as we've been saying, we're moving close more and more closely to where we have less and less freedom and all this stuff. But in some sense, it almost feels like there are a number of other things, like the technology, as you just mentioned, that actually would help to liberate humanity. So I mean, we are at
that
this
technology is being suppressed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it seems like we are
so
at this.
So what do we do about it?
Yeah.
Well, number one, I'm a journalist. Okay, I'm not a activist. I'm not a revolutionary. I can't tell people what to do. But what I will say, and the thing we have to do, is to educate ourselves, then educate our fellows, because only once we understand what is truly going on in the world, and what the possibilities are, and what the potential is, then, and only then, can we make decisions on what we need to do to bring about a more peaceful and loving world.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that the knowledge, of course, and also the to get the curiosity back to and just to, you know, research these kinds of subjects and know that there are so much more to the world and to reality, basically, than we are being told. It feels like our, you know, creative nature is being taken away from us, and we are becoming more and more closed-minded, so to speak. Do you agree?
Right. Yeah. You know, some years ago there were people, forward thinkers, who were writing that we are going back into another dark age.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. You know, gosh, our educational systems are the height, we know more today than we did 100 years ago, and we knew more 100 years ago than 100 years before that. And, you know, how can they say this? And yet, when I look around me and I see the absolute vacuum that television has become, and everybody's distracted with sports and soap operas and game shows and And, you know, that nobody is thinking anymore about what's going on. And, for example, one of the reasons I got into journalism was because it did not require a lot of math, a lot of mathematics,
yeah.
because I've never been very good with numbers. Yeah. And I think that's because I'm a people person. You know? I want to know how does it feel and what does it mean for everybody. I don't really care what A or B means or a bunch of set of numbers.
Yeah.
But yet, for that, I got a very good education. And when I was a young man, I worked as a checker one time in a grocery store, and I could actually make change in my head, you know, because this was before the day of the computer.
Mm.
But now, just yesterday, I was bought a meal, and the bill was like $6.10, and I handed the girl a $10 bill, a dollar bill, and 10 cents, you know. Well, I should get, then that way I get a $5 bill back, and I don't have a bunch of change or a bunch of...
Yeah.
She couldn't handle it. She didn't understand what was going on. She could not even calculate the change in her head. She had to finally put it into the computer cash register that told her that I got $5 back. Okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, we are being dumbed down.
Yeah.
And absolutely. We are being smothered with inconsequential information to keep us from focusing on what's real and meaningful.
Absolutely. So I have a few other points I'd like to just, you know, kind of throw out at you here and
okay.
get your take on it. I mean, I know I read your book Alien Agenda. I guess it's about 3 years ago now. But you talk in there about the moon, because I had a few different articles on my site a while back regarding the idea that the moon might be an an alien artifact, so to speak.
Right. A natural object.
Exactly. I mean, what's your... Do you want to talk a little bit about that, the moon?
I've had more comment on that first chapter in Alien Agenda about the moon than probably anything else in that book. Because, again, everybody thinks they know everything there is to know about the moon.
Yeah.
Why? It's just a dead world. There's nothing up there. There's no atmosphere, no water, no nothing.
Mm.
And yet... we're finding out all the time bits and pieces of information keep dribbling out, and we find out, they have found water on the moon. There is a thin atmosphere on the moon. There is a magnetic energy field around the moon. The moon creaks at certain times of the month when it's closest to the Earth, as though some plate's loose somewhere and shifting. They've seen water sprays spread across the surface of the moon. They've seen strange monuments and artifacts on the surface of the moon that they can't explain, including one that's almost a mile high.
Huh.
It is almost like a needle standing up or an obelisk.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet we're basically told, oh, don't worry about the moon. It's interesting. The moon, on one of the occasions when they dropped one of the landers back onto the moon, NASA announced that the moon rang, reverberated for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
As they themselves said, it almost rang like a bell, which indicates that it might be hollow. Okay?
Yeah.
And we do know that the more dense matter is on the surface of the moon, and you go down through the surface, it gets softer and softer. In fact, I had a very interesting conversation one time with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth astronaut to walk on the moon.
Yeah.
And I said, Dr. Mitchell, what do you think about the theory that the moon is hollow? Well, he started immediately laughing and scoffing. He says, oh, no, the moon's not hollow. But then he continued and he said, of course, we are thinking that perhaps there are giant caverns inside the moon. And, of course, I didn't want to get in his face, but I'm thinking to myself, giant caverns in the moon, hollow moon, what's the difference?
Exactly.
So we don't even know all we think we know about the moon. But the main thing about the moon is, and just stop and think about this, when I was in school years and years ago, we were taught the moon had formed by breaking away from the Earth.
Mm.
But once we got to the moon, we found the minerals and compositions up there that clearly show that it did not come from the Earth.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that means the moon came from somewhere else. So now picture the Earth hanging in space, and here comes the moon. and it goes past the Earth, and it gets caught in the Earth's gravitational field, and it gets slowly, over a period of time, pulled back. And it goes past the Earth again, gets caught in the gravitational field, and it gets pulled back again. In that case, in that natural aspect of it, you would think that the moon's orbit would be elliptical, a long elliptical oval going around the Earth, and that it would probably wobble all around. But that's not what we see. What we find is the moon is in a near perfect circular orbit around the Earth, the only perturbations being that it matches the wobble of the Earth and that it's stationary. One side always faces the Earth. One side, the dark side, is always away from the Earth.
Exactly.
How is that possible naturally? And it's not. It's just not. But see, this is a good example of where our thinking disconnects. We all know and have been taught that there's no such things as aliens out there. And we all know that we are the apex of human civilization and that the moon's been there for thousands and thousands of years. And so, therefore, we didn't put it up there. We all know there's no such thing as aliens, so they didn't put it up there. So, how do we cope with this mystery of the orbit of the moon? Well, we don't. Just don't talk about it. We don't
very
talk
easy.
About it. We don't address it. We don't think very much about it. But Isaac Asimov, the famous scientist and science fiction writer, wrote, he said, the moon should not be where it is, but it is. And so the only thing that logically, the only solution to how the moon got into the position it is that some intelligent force guided it and parked it in orbit around the Earth.
Exactly.
But again, it wasn't us, and we know there's no such thing as aliens, so we just won't talk about that.
So do you think it could be, you know, it's a loaded word, but a God or a kind of a higher force to make us, you know, to make us think, basically, to wake us up? I mean, here's something that
that's entirely possible. Certainly wouldn't rule that out. And personally, I happen to believe in a universal creative force.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, here is my understanding of God. Maybe this will help put it in some sort of perspective for you to think about.
Yeah.
You know that in your computer is the hardware is plastic and maybe bits of metal and some solder and, you know, that in and of itself, the hardware is really nothing. The thing that makes your computer work is the energy, the sparks of energy, the bytes, okay?
Yeah.
And one little byte of energy, it really is pretty insignificant, but when you get billions of bytes of together, then you have artificial intelligence, and you have intelligence. The artificial, but it is intelligence, and it can compute, and it can even, and you know, and if you've played some of these recent games, on the computer games, they've got intelligences now that start figuring out how you're playing, and then they move to counteract you, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so you see, you've got intelligence, and so the sum total of the sparks of energy within your computer creates an electrical or an electromagnetic thinking energy.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, we know, now let's extrapolate that up to the human brain. We can create a human brain. We can put the tissue together. We can build it. We can make a brain. Okay? In fact, we could actually build a whole human being. But we cannot make that human being a true thinking sentient human being because we don't know how to energize it. Okay?
Yeah.
So we could physically make your body, Heinrich, but we can't energize it.
Yeah.
Because the thing that makes you is not the flesh, it's the energy.
Yeah.
You are an energy being, okay? And we know this because now with scientific evidence they have shown that there is an electrical force field around the body, right?
Yeah,
some people call it the aura, okay, of energy. And we cannot duplicate that energy. And they've also shown scientifically that when you die, that energy does not dissipate. It just moves off somewhere.
Yeah.
And that fits in with what science tells us, that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only change form.
Mm.
So, So you, as one individual spark of energy, an energy being, may not be all that great, but when you combine with me, your family, my family, everyone in the world, everyone in the universe, then you have a collective, we're like the bytes in your computer. And when it's all combined, you have a universal consciousness that is aware of everything, and which pretty well fits the definition of God, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this I'm starting to think about the ideas of stuff like, you know, the holographic universe and things like
this. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's all here because we imagine it's here.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, do you have any take on it? If we ultimately were to, if you were to consider what reality is, do you think that there is a real physical thing in that sense, or is it as I said, a holographic kind of expression of a
right.
of a universal mind?
Well, yes and no. Okay, we are all at the mercy of the collective consciousness. Okay, so when you go outside of your home and you step out into the street and you get hit by a car, that car is very real, okay? Everyone agrees that that car is there. And I don't care how much you want to say, oh, that car is just a holographic image and it's not going to hurt me. It will kill you, okay?
Yeah.
It will run over you. So in that regard, no, we cannot necessarily, at least most of us. Of course, there's examples all through history, up to and including Jesus, that, you know, was able to heal people, raise people from the dead, move through things, create things, turn water into wine, all this good stuff. And perhaps he could through the conscious manipulation of energy. But most of us are not to that point. So we are pretty much stuck in this three-dimensional material universe. And we're just going to have to learn to live with it. But collectively, we can change the environment that we're in. Let me try to give you a good example. Well, I had a friend one time who just really did not like to go to parties. Okay, that it just frightened her, and she felt out of place, and she was afraid everybody was looking at her or talking about her, and she just was uncomfortable in a social situation. She didn't like to go to parties, and I kept trying to encourage her to go to parties, and finally, you know, I finally just said, look, she said, well, I don't know anybody and I'm not having any fun. And I said, well, look, you're just looking at it from the wrong standpoint. Think about it. And here's an opportunity to meet some new people and make some new friends. And so I kind of helped her along. We go to parties. I introduce her to people. I try to find somebody who could talk to her about the things that interested her. And sure enough, before long, she enjoyed going to parties. So parties went from being a bad thing to being a good thing. Did the parties change? No.
No.
It was her perception change.
Yeah.
And like right now, see, the corporate control mass media keeps us bombarded with how terrible a situation the world's in.
Yeah.
Oh, there's death and destruction in Afghanistan and Iraq and in Palestine and in Africa, and there's hurricanes and there's tornadoes and there's all this bad stuff going on. There's political corruption, and we just get bombarded with this 24/7 until a lot of us begin to think, you know, the world's a pretty bad place. And when enough people are thinking the world is a pretty bad place, believe me, it's going to be a pretty bad place.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet I live out here in rural Texas, and I'm standing here looking out my window at the beautiful trees. The leaves are beginning to turn. I see the birds flying, and it's peaceful, and everything's still kind of green. And, you know, if you go out there, you realize, hey, this is a beautiful world.
Yeah.
It's really pretty nice. So it's up to us to get our heads on straight. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to, obviously, I'm not giving up on trying to look and see what's happening in the world. I'm writing books about 9/11. I'm writing books about the secret societies and globalization.
Yeah.
So I am concerned about that. But you cannot live your life in fear and dread and anxiety, or you'll begin to perceive the whole world in those terms.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And of course, this again gets me back to to the year of 2012 that you of course mentioned in our first part that we did on Red Ice Radio, and to tie it back to that date again, because it seems like if all the things that we've been talking about here, that the knowledge of energy and how things work and what we focus on basically become manifests. I mean, if things were about to happen, you know, kind of like if Earth changes really are, you know, starting to get out of hand and stuff like that, could a solution, I guess, to the problem there be that we collectively, as the human race, kind of gather our focus and kind of I guess manifest this stuff away? Is that too far? I mean, what's your take on that?
Right. Now keep in mind that I'm not so far out as to say, oh, well, we'll just all have a good attitude and everything will be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we're going to have to work at it, okay? Mm. That's another thing. You know, there are those in the UFO community who truly believe that our space brothers are going to come down and somehow save us,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That ain't going to happen, okay? It's just not going to happen. Number one, it's against the non-intervention rule, okay, the
yeah.
prime directive, if you will.
Mm.
Number two, if they're the least bit hostile, if they're in any way envious of our world, then, you know, why risk losing an invasion battle? Why don't they just sit back, let us kill each other off, and then they just come in and take the planet?
Yeah.
And so I just don't think, whether they're benign or not so benign, I don't think we're going to see alien intervention in saving us, okay? We're going to have to save ourselves, and
yeah.
that means we got to educate ourselves to what's really going on. We got to educate ourselves to the real meaningful topics of discussion, such as environmental degradation
yeah.
and the poisoning of our foods, the chemtrails, the chemicals that are being dumped in the atmosphere, the weaponization of space,
yeah.
You know, all of these issues, this is what we have to concentrate on rather than the game shows and the celebrities and the sports events. And then we have to work towards it, but we work at it not from a fearful perspective.
Mm.
Oh, the world's going to hell in a handbasket and you know, it's never going to be any better. We have to go at it from a standpoint of love and optimism and think, you know, this is a pretty nice world. Let's keep working to keep it nice and even make it better.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think that, you know, a thing like, let's say, 2012 could be used at this point also to kind of manipulate people into thinking that, you know, beyond that date, everything will be fine, it's okay, so everything will be good, you know, so we don't have to worry now?
Well, you know, all of the prophecies, including the Mayans and on up, just says that's when one time period will end and another time period begins.
Mm.
Or they said this will be the end of time, meaning the end of a certain cycle. I, for one, do not think that the world's going to end in 2012.
Mm.
But I will say this. I think by 2013, 2014, let's you and I talk again, okay? And because, you know, with God willing and the creek don't rise, we'll still be here.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk again, and I'll be willing to bet you that by late 2013, 2014, we'll probably agree that the world as we know it today will not be the same then.
Exactly, exactly,
okay?
Yeah.
Now, that does not necessarily, it may be worse. It may be better, but it's definitely going to be different.
I mean,
9/11 occurred only 5 years ago,
yeah.
And yet I've lived long enough. Believe me, the United States, as it was in 1999, we're in a whole new world. We're in a different place now. This is not the same country. We're not operating the same. We don't feel the same. We're not in, you know,
yeah.
It's just all different.
So we have to, as we do, I guess, in that sense, take back the media. And I just want to mention or get your
take
on
it. That's true. We definitely have to get control of the media so that all aspects of news and information becomes available to all people.
Yeah.
It's there now, actually, but if you have to work at it, okay?
Yeah.
Henry, just think back, say, 10 years ago, and I don't know how old you are, but hopefully 10 years ago you were essentially an adult, right?
No. I'm 27, so 17 is not an adult.
Well, you would have been 17.
Yeah.
And that's, for all practical purposes, an adult.
All right. Okay.
So,
sure.
17, I think you'll agree, you are not the same person today that you were when you were 17, are you?
No, of course not.
You know more, you think about different things,
yeah.
You understand things better, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So in another 10 years, we're going to look back and we're going to realize that we are not the same person as we are now.
Exactly.
So everything changes, and the trick is to see that you hold on to the things that are meaningful and true and let go of the things that are false and misleading and
And
all like that, and so that as you change for the better.
Yeah. So one idea I came to think about was regarding that we have been able to use the internet in these last few years now as an incredible tool to communicate so much of this kind of information here, but. There have been hints about, you know, the censorship of internet and things like Internet 2. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yes. I'm well aware of all this. And see, that's, again, they've got to do something to keep us from freely communicating with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you have knowledge, and knowledge brings power. And if the people gain power, then that means that the ruling elites are going to lose power. And they can't allow that. And, of course, there'll be every excuse in the world. You know, I can almost tell you right now, it'll be to save the children.
Yeah.
Okay? You got to save the children and protect the children and then protect the innocent.
Yeah.
And then to protect us against terrorists. You know, they'll have every excuse in the world.
Yeah.
But the main thing is they've got to stop us from communicating with each other, because the one secret that we have over and above the secret societies is that there are more of us than there are of them. And we're getting smarter all the time. And I think they know this. And I think that's why they're in this rush to gain complete control over the world.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And Jim, I mean, this has been an excellent interview. And I certainly would want to have you back sometime in the future, if that's possible. And of course, in the last few minutes here, I mean, basically the floor is open if there's something you'd like to talk about, or if you just want to, you know, mention how to get your books and your website again and so forth.
Well, again, to put in a crass commercial plug.
Yeah, sure.
My books are available at any bookstore. They can probably order them. There are UK editions, I think, of almost all my books. You can order off of Amazon.com. I think you mentioned earlier there's an Amazon.com UK that you could probably get, or you can go to my website, jimmarrs.com, JIMMARRS.com.
Excellent.
And I keep trying to post articles of interest that you probably won't see in the mainstream American media.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, a lot of the things they end up posting come out of Europe.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a strange thing, because over here, you know, we have the First Amendment that guarantees us freedom of press, and you know, we like to say that we have this free, unfettered, and watchdog media, and yet it's under total control of four or five corporations.
Exactly.
And we seem to be getting less information than the Europeans.
Right.
By the way, the line over here is that freedom of the press belongs to the guy that owns the press.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing now, right? We are, as you say, we're down to, what is it, five big corporations, basically?
Yeah. Yeah, just a handful.
Oh my God!
And see, I was real concerned about 10 years ago, because what had been, see, when I was a young man, every major city in the United States had at least two, sometimes three and four different newspapers, and three or four TV stations, and a dozen radio stations, and you know, if one was kind of under control and wouldn't reveal a story, then the others would. But now it's all devolved down to every major city basically has one large newspaper. Those newspapers are owned by multinational corporations, and same way with the TV networks. For example, NBC is owned by General Electric. General Electric, you know, NBC Television is just one probably not so profitable branch of their huge multinational conglomerate. Where they really make their money is off of their defense contracts. So is it really in the best interest of NBC as a wholly owned subsidiary of General Electric to tell the truth about Iraq?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and this here is the I think the root of the problem in that sense, because everything is owned by one, you know, one single point, or if it is a corporation basically. And I guess according to the definition that I recently heard, I guess corporatism is the equivalent to fascism. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's what Mussolini said. Mussolini, who's kind of credited with coining the term fascism, because in fact they were named after his black-shirted fascistas, he said that's really not the correct term. The correct term should be corporatism.
Yeah.
Okay. The combined power of corporations in the state, which is the basic definition of fascism.
Yeah.
And when you look at the United States today, what do you see? You see the combined power of corporate America and the government.
Yeah,
Power fueled by nationalism. And by the way, think about this. The only difference in what's happening in America today with what happened in Germany in the 1930s and in Italy in the 1920s is that under fascist Italy and Nazi Germany, the state gained control over the corporations and merge them to create a fascist state. In modern America, the corporations have gained control over the state.
Yeah.
But the end result's the same.
Exactly. it's crazy. Yeah, so there we go. I mean, that's what we have to do. Stay informed, stay focused, and really, you know,
Stay optimistic.
Yeah, exactly. Stay optimistic to know what's going on. So everybody head on over to jimmars.com and check out his books and check out his website with all his excellent writing over there. So again, Jim, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Hendrik.